Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance. Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Surrounded by about 100 poker players here at Harrah's today, some of them in the midday tournaments, some of them playing cash games, some of them just trying to win the $98,000 bad beat. Hello, I am Paul Harrah's. My partner, Dennis Phillips, is not here in St. Louis. He is on the road in Las Vegas already with the World Series of Poker just a couple of days away. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm doing rather well. How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. Now, I know that things don't really start up at the Rio for the World Series of Poker until later on this week, so why are you out there already?
Well, a friend of mine, a guy by the name of Tom McAvoy, who won the World Series in 83, got married yesterday.
Oh, congratulations. We had Tom on the show when we were at the NAPT back in February. And for those of our listeners who may not have heard that show, Tom was the first guy ever signed as a member of Team Poker Stars Pro.
Yes, he was. And he still won today. He started playing back in the 70s, played heavily through the 80s and 90s, and he's still playing. You'll catch him online playing until 6 in the morning sometimes. So, quite the guy. He and Yolanda got married yesterday. We're actually having a tournament in a couple hours out here at Caesars that Tom is hosting. And they put a $1,000 bounty on me today, so this should be quite interesting.
Is it on you and all the pros or just you? I can't imagine it's just you.
No, there's about half a dozen of us that are there. That are going. Chad Brown that we had last week and Vanessa are there, and they'll each have a bounty on it. T.J. Cloutier, who I talked to extensively last night, will be there, and he has a bounty on his head. About six or seven of us that will be there. I ran into everybody from Andy Block to Lisa Parsons. You might remember the gal that I played with in 08.
Yes.
Out there that finished very highly.
Yep.
So it was a good time last night, and today should be even better.
Terrific. Then Thursday is when things start up for the satellites of the World Series of Poker, and we're going to get into the schedule for that in just a moment. Later on in the show, in about 15 minutes or so, we're going to play for you a couple of segments that Dennis and I recorded 2 weekends ago when we were at Foxwoods for their Megastacks Challenge. Bernard Lee, the poker pro who is the spokesperson for that casino and co-host of ESPN.com's Inside Deal, he invited us to come up there, and we sat down with him and Kevin Schaffel, who was a member of the 2009 November 9. I figured let's get Dennis, who was there in 08, and Kevin, who was there in 09, and Bernard, who went really, really deep to 13th place in 2005. Let's get them all together and give you, the listener, some tips about what you really need to know about to prepare for going out to the World Series of Poker. So we'll get to that in just about 15 minutes or so. Before we really get in-depth into series stuff, though, I do want to go back to Sunday when you were on the final shows of the NBC National Heads Up Championship.
That was quite the experience, to say the least.
You came in third after being knocked out by the eventual winner of the whole thing, Annie Duke. The two semifinal matches came down to you and Annie and Eric Seidel versus Scotty Wynn. Annie said that in her match with you, she actually tweeted about this, that she was watching it on Sunday and said, watching herself, she realized that she did not play well in the first 15 minutes and had to make a big adjustment. What was your take on your play against her and how she played against you?
Well, I had watched some of what Annie had done earlier against Jerry Yang and against a couple of other people. And I tried actually to switch my play at the beginning to throw her a little off base. I'm not exactly known for being the wild, aggressive guy that raises on every hand and makes the continuation bets all the time and that. And also, I played big pots against her, which shocked her. You could tell that at the beginning of it. It worked for the first hour.
Yep.
I built up a pretty good chip lead, which is exactly what I wanted. Got into position. If we could have got to one of those showdown hands where it's, you know, ace-queen versus pocket sevens, that type thing, a race. That's what I was trying to get to then. sometime we'd get them both in where it was at least somewhere in the neighborhood of a 50-50, and we'll see what happens.
Yep.
Never happened there.
In one of the interview segments where they were asking the various players for tips on how to play a heads-up tournament like this, you said, be aggressive, and when you can't be aggressive, be aggressive. But I noticed, Dennis, that on many of the hands where you were the big blind, and in heads-up, the small blind is always the person on the button, so they act first pre-flop and then last after the flop, there were a lot of hands where, when you were playing out of position, you check-called. In fact, Craig Hummer and Alan Najad, who were doing the play-by-play for NBC, even commented on the fact that they didn't see you lead out from the big blind position once in the whole tournament against her.
But I didn't have to. If you were watching the play, it was playing exactly what... And again, I did not see it yesterday, so I did not see how they commented it. But they should have noted that Annie was making the continuation bets when she was leading out.
Yep.
I did not have to initiate it at that stage. Therefore, I could either sit and trap, or if I had a weak hand, I could sit back also and see a reaction from her.
Yep.
She was pushing it also. So I tell you, when we played it, I doubt if there was a half a dozen hands in which one or the other of us didn't raise. It very seldom checked down to the river.
Yep.
We were throwing some bucks out there.
It looked like everybody was always raising on the small blind and more often than not throwing out the continuation bet.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I did run into aces, or I got pocket aces at one time. I don't know if they showed that hand or not. But it was so disgusting because I made the very same play, the very thing. And she told me later she had a deuce six offsuit is why she mucked.
Yep.
I went, give her anything, because I'm telling you, with a 9-5, she probably would have called there.
Yeah,
so
you made,
like, no, don't.
You made absolutely nothing with those aces, which happens a lot in cash games, too. You look down at them, and, you know, you're on the button with aces. Oh, man, I'm going to make a lot of money here because it's going to be raised and then re-raised, and it's going to come to me, and I'm going to four-bet this sucker, and I'm going to take down a big pot. And, of course, it gets checked all the way around to you, and you make a little bit of a raise, and the two blinds have nothing, and they fold.
Yeah,
that's all you got.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because that really could have done it. That could have helped out. No, it worked out exactly. I switched. I did not play that type of a hand or game. I did a little bit against Doyle, but not totally. And I definitely did not against Ellie or Chris, either one. That's one of the things that you have to be able to change your game up. You have to be able to play against your opponent. If you go in there with the same mindset and the same patterns, these players are too good for that. They will catch on to it in a heartbeat and be able to start putting you on hands.
Well, Annie said that she was quite confused during the match against you. I also saw that she was quite annoyed because our friend Joe McGowan and another friend of ours from St. Louis, Gary Bolden, were both out there sitting there rooting you on. And Joe had an air horn, kind of like the truck horn that you got famous with the Philippians blowing the horn. Your friend Dave Tucker was doing that when you made the November 9 back in 08. So Joe had an air horn there, and at one point after you won a hand, he hit it, and Annie was really irritated. In fact, she instantly asked the floor guy, can that not happen again?
Well, and part of it, and I don't think they realize it when they're in there, that's the back section of Caesars. And they had a lot of mics around there, and they had a lot of other, I don't know what you want to call it, just props and everything on it. And it echoed in that room almost.
Oh, yeah?
So it was like a confined space that they're blasting this horn in. So, yeah, it was quite loud.
You know, they had a shot of Scotty Wynn, who was at the time playing against Eric. He was really surprised when the horn went off, too.
He told me later he about jumped out of his skin. He didn't know it was coming. It was like, oh, my gosh, you know, but he doesn't care. Scotty's a real good guy. He just blew it off. He said at the time, it was like, what the heck is that? But, you know, 30 seconds later, he forgot about it.
Speaking of Scotty, in his match against Eric, he was drinking O'Doul's and said, I think he just said this casually, but I think he meant it, that he has a $10,000 prop bet with somebody that he won't drink alcohol this year.
I did not know that. Wow. Okay.
I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure in Scotty Wynn's world $10,000 is enough.
Well, that's a good point. But have you been hearing some of the prop bets that have come out here in the last few weeks?
No.
I mean, you know, I really don't want to see Mike Manasau run naked down the hall.
Yeah, well, we talked about that one with Chad.
Well, yeah, and then the bet he has with Ted Forrester about the weight loss.
What's that one?
Remember, I'll probably get this wrong, but a couple of years ago he had a bet with him he's going to lose so many pounds, like 60 pounds before the main event.
Yeah.
And he was 9 pounds off with only about 5 days to go and literally did not eat for 5 days in a row. And he made it by 2 pounds.
Wow.
Collected it. He has a bet with him now, and I probably won't get the whole details. If Ted Forrester can get all the way down to 139 pounds, he only weighs about 180. It's a $2 million bet.
With Mattisau?
On this thing. With Mattisau.
Wow.
And I think Mike, if he doesn't make it, he has to pay Mike like $150,000 on it.
Wow. Now speaking of weight loss props, you've got one against Joe McGowan. And by the way, people have been asking, where's Joe been on our show? I don't want to go into too much detail here, but Joe had some health issues with one of his kids that he was dealing with, and he's also recently taken on a new private poker coaching client. And, you know, we're kind of bound to secrecy about that, and we don't want to go into detail. But when we're out there at the World Series of Poker, and I'll be joining you in Vegas in just a few days, and next week's show will be all about interviews that we're doing. We're hoping to have Joe rejoin us if he can find the time, and we're looking forward to that. But you and Joe and the poker lawyer, Josh Schindler, have a weight loss prop, and I think it's coming due fairly soon, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It's due here at the end of the week. On it. We all had a goal that we were trying to reach, and as long as we all three would reach it, then there was no money exchanged. But if you did not reach your goal, you had to pay the other two, not only a set amount, which was substantial, but also a penalty per pound for every pound over it.
Wow.
So, yeah. And I will be happy to say that I am about 1.5 pounds from it right now and should have no problems by Friday, you know, tipping the scales where I want to be.
Good. Good for you.
Joe is the same way. I think he's like 2 pounds away from it. Josh, on the other hand, isn't eating.
He's kind of trying to crash before the deadline, huh?
Yeah, but he's close. I think he'll make it, too. He's lost a fair amount of weight also, so I don't think it's anything. He is the furthest from it from any of us, but I have a feeling he'll make it by Friday also.
Well, you know, I see you all the time, and you have definitely lost a lot of weight, particularly after we're seeing you on the NBC Heads Up, which you taped back at the beginning of March. Here we are almost 3 months later, and I don't know how many pounds you've actually taken off, but you look a lot better, and you should look really good on TV this year. Speaking of TV, the World Series of Poker starts up later this week with one of the three events that will be televised. Of course, the main event will be televised, and that'll go in July, and with the final table again in November. This will be the third year of the November 9 concept. They'll also be televising on ESPN the Tournament of Champions, which is a $1 million free roll, which you can still vote for, by the way. Choose the champions you want to have in that. You can go to WSOP.com. And the third event that will be televised is the Players' Championship, which is the $50,000 buy-in, 8-game mix, which will finish with a final table at which they play all no-limit hold'em, which is how they got that event back on TV. ESPN was not interested in showing a round of Raz, a round of high-low stud, a round of PLO, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because the viewers have voted with their remotes to not watch events that show anything but No Limit Hold'em. So that'll start this Friday, and I think you'll probably get a lot more people in there because it's going to be televised. A lot of pros like you have deals in their contract for televised events, right?
Oh, absolutely. They were worried that they weren't going to have, you know, 50, 60 people, something like that. And with it being televised, I think you'll probably quadruple that or close to it. It would not surprise me to see them reach 200 people in this tournament. And for a 50,000 entry, that's an awesome prize pool.
I think that would make a $10 million prize pool.
That is it.
Yeah.
You do math very well.
Thank you.
But, yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, I don't know for sure. But I'm guessing it'll be 150 plus, and it could easily reach 200. Because lots of people are coming out now and ready to play that.
All right.
I cannot play it, unfortunately. I'm going to be in Latin America at the time. But it's still going to be some fun.
Yeah. There are going to be 54 open events. Only 15 of them, by the way, are full ring game, no limit hold'em events with 10 or nine players at the table. There will be shorthanded events, there will be heads-up events, and there, of course, will be deuce-to-seven draw lowball events and seven-card stud and limit hold'em and horse and Raz and PLO and triple chance and lots and lots of them, which we'll be talking about as we cover the World Series of Poker from the Rio. But the one that most people will be interested in will be the 1K buy-in events, the first of which will be this Saturday and Sunday, day 1A and 1B, and those will go on every weekend right through the World Series. You'll have six chances to play in these $1,000 events, and if you've never played at the World Series of Poker, when we come back from the break, you'll hear Dennis and Kevin Schaffel and Bernard Lee and myself giving you some tips on what you should expect. All of that recorded just a couple of weekends ago at Foxwoods. So we'll take a break and do that. But first, let's have some words about our great sponsor, the people at PokerStars.net, where you can actually go right now and qualify for the main event, right?
Oh, absolutely. They had almost 2,000 people qualified last year on their, and it's so easy to do. You go to PokerStars.net. You can get on it without costing you a dime. And I'm telling you, you can work your way up. The benefits are unbelievable. You now, they have a new one on there that I'm going to be lucky enough to play in. It's the NHL Charity Shootout. And they're going to have people in a pre-roll tournament being able to win it, to come to Vegas, to sit down at the table with myself or a different pro and several of the NHL celebrities. These are former Hall of Famers or ones that are in Vegas ready to receive an award for most valuable player or whatever. It's just unbelievable. You can go to Australia for free. You can go to Europe for free. You can go down there to Latin America, where I'm going to be going here next week, to Lima, Peru, to play in a tournament down there and take in the sights in that. All of that on PokerStars.net. Just get online, download the program, and start playing. That's all you've got to do. The rewards are unbelievable. Everything from free cars to free trips to who knows what. You've got to do it. Go to PokerStars.net and look me up.
This is The Final Table. Our podcasts are available on Dennis's site, thechipleader.com, or you can download them automatically via iTunes. And we're live every week. Tuesday afternoon, we turn it into Poker Day here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host, Paul Harrah's, on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Sitting here wearing my Final Table radio show hat. We've got all sorts of Final Table merchandise at thechipleader.com. Shirts and hats and sweatshirts, perfect for wearing in those cold poker rooms where you play live action. We've just lowered the shipping fees on there to make things even more affordable for you. And we still do have some of those shirts from the April World Series of Poker Circuit event here in St. Louis that you can get for just $10. Go to thechipleader.com, click the shop button, and find out about the Final Table merchandise now with lower shipping fees. All right, World Series of Poker begins just days from now. What do you need to know to be prepared? We talk with Kevin Schaffel, one of the November 9 from last year, and Bernard Lee, who finished 13th in the 2005 main event. And, of course, Dennis, who was third in the 2008 November 9 final table of the main event. We sat down at Foxwoods a couple of weekends ago and started off by talking about some articles Dennis has written on exactly this subject in Bluff Magazine and Total Rewards Magazine and All In Magazine. Roll it, Mike.
The all-in one was interesting because he was asking me how to play position and, you know, what some of the key things are when you're out there in the World Series.
Okay, so what are some of the things you said about position?
There's such a huge difference in playing early, middle, or late position on your hands. One of the key things I think that people fall into is what I call pretty hands. They play that ace-10 under the gun. They play a queen-jack suited. Hands that can basically beat nothing now. And you get re-raised, you're out of position, it can cost you a lot of chips. You can bleed them. Now, late position, when you're behind the people, those are hands you can raise with. You can play so much different on that. So I kind of said to beware of those pretty hands.
And those become especially important in the smaller events. I mean, if you play the $1,000 buy-in events, and there are going to be six of them this year, you do get triple chips, but that's only 3,000 in chips.
Correct.
You're really not playing the deep stack poker you are in the main event where you get 30,000 in chips and you're going to have to play poker for 2 weeks. I mean, these 1K events may go a few days, but you are not going to be able to make a lot of mistakes. And mistakes like that, playing the wrong hands in the wrong position, can bleed chips off, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I like the Bluff magazine was a little different. On that one, I went more into preparation for it, to go out there a day early, to explore the room, make sure and see, so you're familiar with it. Check out everything from the eating places to the restrooms to the whatever, because your 15-minute break when you have 2,000 people there is a massive stampede on it. To try to get your eating habits used to it, to not have any kind of jet lag or anything, so that you're going to bed at the right time and getting up to be prepared for it. Just basic stuff like that on it.
Kevin, when was the first time you went out and played in any World Series?
2004. Mm-hmm. I think I played in a couple of small events, but that was my first 10K event.
Mm-hmm. And did you have to think to yourself, I want to get out there and know what it's like before I actually go? Did you talk to anybody else who had ever played in it?
I'm not even sure if I knew anybody at that time that played. I'm pretty sure I didn't. And it was at Binion's back then, and it was quite overwhelming, I will admit. You know, especially, well, I got lucky early. I got lucky that I didn't sit down at a table with anybody, you know, that I knew for at least maybe two or three hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, something like that. It was actually the first day I didn't know anybody, and that kind of calmed me down a little bit. And as I started playing with people that I knew and recognized from TV, I started getting a little more nervous, again, being my first tournament.
Yeah.
But it was actually a great experience down at Binion's. I don't know. You know, a lot of people don't know about it, but that's the history down there when you walk in and you see all the pictures of everybody, all the old-timers. It's actually a very interesting environment to play in. Not that the Rio isn't, but it's totally different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a much smaller field then. That was the year that Greg Raymer won, so there were about 2,500 people in
that. It was the year after Moneymaker, which is how I got out there, and there were about 2,500, right? 2,576, I think.
Yeah. Bernard, you went the year after that, 2005.
Right.
And how many were in it the year you were there?
56-19.
Mm-hmm.
Give or take one or two.
Had you ever been to a main event?
No. It was Moneymaker started the tournament poker world for me. I've been playing poker ever since I was a little kid. My dad taught me. I still remember the one time I told him I had a full house, but I really had quads because I had a wild card. I just didn't think about it that way. You know, when you're 8, 10 years old, or whatever.
They don't use the wild card in the main event
anymore.
You know what? I think that's a loss.
They should.
I think any November Niner should get a wild card, don't you?
Once.
Right. There you go.
You know, one eyed Jack.
That's right.
But it was one of those things where I really wanted to make the World Series. In all honesty, I couldn't qualify in 2004. I tried my hardest, and I didn't make it. And then qualified for the World Poker Finals here at Fox's, my first big main event. And then qualified for what at the time was New England Poker Classic. Now it's the Fox's Poker Classic. I bubbled, literally bubble boy. They paid out 35, weird number, but 35. I was 36th, and I mean, it was really, at that time, you've never had a huge cash. It would have been $7,000 or $8,000. I was devastated. I was really sad because I left my wife at home with a young'un, and we also had another one coming on the way. And I said, God, that $7,000 or $8,000 would have just gone so far. But if somebody had told me, knock, 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 don't worry about it, I'm going to give you really a heartache right now because I've been working on my game for so long, but something special is about to happen. Don't worry about it. And, of course, you know, the run, it's a 13th. But I would say one of the comments from Dennis, I 100% agree, and this is one of the comments I make to a lot of people when they go out to the World Series, is go a day or two early. Not only just adjusting time-wise, but more of just get over the spectacle. You walk into then the Amazon room. Now it's going to be the pavilion. But just to walk in and hear what I always say, the symphony of chips, of shuffling, and the spectacle of, you've never seen a football field full of poker tables. I don't care if you come to Fox's, which is one of the biggest rooms in the world, even that is dwarfed by the Rio of how many, 277 tables last year, or 200 and whatever. This year it's over 307. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And you don't want to sit down for the first time and be in awe for the first two levels. And next thing you know, you're like, wow, my stack is half gone. I have no idea how that happened, because you're thinking about everything else. You need to be in your own world and focusing on playing. Be in awe the first day. Sit down and play.
How about just the walk in the hallways.
Absolutely.
At a quarter to 12, 10 to 12,
right.
it's like being in New York City, yeah. on the streets. There's so many people and so many cameras and so many things going on,
right.
that you literally need to be there a good half hour before any tournament starts just to make sure that you can get through the maze of people and get to your seat on time if you're one of those who wants to sit down at, you know, yeah. right at 12.
And if you're not staying at the Rio, if you're staying at the Rio, first of all, understand that the elevators are going to take a while.
Right.
Right? You can't leave your room at 11:55,
right.
even from the Ipanema, and expect to get there by 12. I mean, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. And then if you're not staying there, don't think that other poker players aren't staying in your hotel. And so suddenly the cab ride becomes an issue, and of course Las Vegas, the oppressive heat of 105, 110, even at, like, you know, 11 in the morning. So, I mean, there's so many factors that you just don't think about, and you don't want that to hit you. Like, you land at 10 o'clock where a lot of flights land, you go to sleep, and you wake up, and you go, oh, it's just an everyday, and, you know, wherever you're from, and you wake up, and go, what just happened to me?
Yeah. Dennis, when you first went out there in 2008, you had never been to the main event. You had never been to the World Series, right?
Correct.
Okay, so you didn't have anybody who could tell you about all this preparation stuff that we're talking about here on the show, right?
Oh, not at all. I was a pure tourist.
So
I'm walking down the hall going, golly gee, folks. Yeah, this is amazing.
and it is amazing, and Bernard's right. The word spectacle is absolutely the right word to use, because that's what it is. When you walk into that spectacle, you can absolutely be overwhelmed, even if you're just going there, as I am, to play cash games.
Right.
It's a remarkable thing to be surrounded by that many people playing the game. But let's talk about the physical nature of how you need to prepare for this, because, you know, you got to know when to eat, you got to know when to sleep, you got to know when to run for the bathrooms, etc. Talk about that.
You really do. I mean, you have to time everything and just be prepared. Like Bernie was saying over here, there's just so many little things you can do. If you're staying at another casino, instead of having breakfast there, why not, just to be safe, go over to the Rio and have breakfast over there, mm-hmm. where you're physically there and you're relaxing. You're not worried about rushing. You're not worried about walking out and seeing a cab line that's 50 people long you have to wait for, or something that way. Why put an extra stress on yourself? Be prepared for it. Be prepared. Put a couple of snacks in your pocket. Again, make sure you know where the restroom is at. Time it accordingly. Don't start chugging coffee at noon, because I'm telling you, by midnight, that could have an effect on you. Mm-hmm. Know your own body.
In fact, don't start chugging any liquids in an event where you have to wait 2 hours to take a break, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that sounds like a joke, but it's very important.
You start drinking at least in the second hour, because then you can go. And by the way, just a comment about the bathroom is, there's a bathroom right there. But remember, that's the bathroom that everyone's going to gun for. So I always tell people, find the bathroom that's within walking distance, five away, and just gun for that one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the one in that rotund past the snack bar, mm-hmm. I just gun for that one. Forget the first one, because, you know, there's the line that's going to be there. I just start jetting for that, and at least you're maybe 20th on line for that one, you know?
Yeah, and I always, as it's coming up to break time, check to see where the button is, too. If I'm going to miss a hand, which can happen sometimes on this without any problem, do I want to miss it before the break or after the break? You know, if the button's in a position where it's not advantageous for me to leave 2 minutes before the break starts and get a rush on everybody else, I do it.
What would be an advantageous position?
Well, what I mean is, it comes around there. I'm the first. I'm
first or second to act.
Yep.
Right.
Then you're going to get up and leave.
Exactly.
If I'm playing the button or the cutoff, then I'm going to want to stay.
Right. Exactly.
And I will tell you.
You don't mind missing your blinds. If you have to miss a hand or two, you don't mind missing your blinds.
I think it's more the early position. And the early position, I think, is more. I think a lot of people, when I talk to them, when I ask them this question, a lot mm-hmm. of my students, they say, oh, well, I'll just wait through the blinds, get through me, then I'll leave. And so, wait a second, that's the most advantageous time. When you're on the button and the cutoff,
correct.
You want to be in late position. Remember, position is everything in this game. Where you don't care is under the gun plus one. How many hands are you actually going to play? I mean, realistically, if you're playing really solid ABC poker, the number of hands you're playing is shrunk. You know, it's really, really slow, because you want to play a solid hand. So it's exactly true. If I need to jet to the bathroom, and I'm desperate, and it's in the middle of the level, I'm going to wait till I'm about under the gun plus two. If I see a hand that is nothing, fold, and I'm bolting. And by the time I get back, I'll probably get there by under the gun or big blind, just in case. And been no harm, no foul. The odds of me playing those hands were slim as it was.
Exactly. You play. I would love to see a statistic sometimes of some of the pros, how many hands they play under the gun plus one, that versus what they play in the cutoff position or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Hugely difference.
Kevin, like me, you travel to poker rooms with a backpack, and at the main event, I'm sure you've got all sorts of supplies. Share some secrets. What do you carry with you when you go?
Well, I have to tell you a funny story about the backpack, because I didn't have a backpack at last year's main event. And I always carry this Bellagio yellow plastic bag that they give you wherever you go. Like you go to the snack shop, that's a big plastic bag with a little handle. And this is what I used to carry all my stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was really tough trying to put my sweatshirt in there if I didn't need that, my jacket, my hat, all my snacks and this and that, which I'll tell you about in a second. So I get to the Legends of Poker a month after, and I see Ray Henson. There's a lot of people know Ray Henson, and he says, Kevin, the first thing you got to do, I've already made the final table. He says, the first thing you got to do is you got to get a backpack. He says, you got to get rid of this bag, this plastic bag you're carrying everything around.
The bag lady bag.
So, you know what? I said, you know what? You're probably right. And as soon as I got home from that trip and I came in second and that one, I said, I can afford a backpack now. And I went to one store, and I got it. And as soon as I saw him again, I said, Ray, look what I got. Yeah. So that's the backpack. No, the backpack has water in there. It has, maybe some pretzels, something sweet if I need it, a little sugary if I need a little something.
Mm-hmm.
My jacket, because it does get very cold and hot in poker rooms, and you need to be prepared for both.
Right.
Hats, paper and pencil if I want to write things down. A headset with music if I want to. I don't usually listen to it during the World Series, and especially after you make the money, you can't use it. But I actually put it on in between breaks or at dinner sometimes if I'm not with somebody, and just relax that way. So it carries a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Why don't you wear the headphones while you're playing?
I don't like to wear them in the tournaments because I don't want to miss anything at all. In the cash games, I shouldn't want to miss anything either, but I generally don't. And I don't put them on early. And once I feel like I'm comfortable with the table in a cash game, if I want to listen to music, if it's late or something, I'll do that. But I don't want to miss a sound. We had a very interesting thing happen in the tournament yesterday where a guy was counting his chips out, and somebody had bet 12,000 or had gone all in, and this guy was counting his last 12,500 chips out. And he said what everybody at the table heard him say, call. And he claims he didn't say it. Well, if I had my headset on, I would have never heard him say it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to miss anything at all that could cause me to turn my hand over early and, disqualify myself or cost me chips. So I just, for me personally, I think it's important not to wear them and try to be aware of everything going on.
I don't know how many different times I've seen somebody wearing a headset or whatever and miss something.
Yeah.
A guy down there makes a raise, and then he misses it, and so he announces his own raise. That's a declaration. You've just re-raised, guy.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
And he takes his headphones off and, what? I didn't know.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's just that little thing right there can cost you a ton of chips if you aren't careful.
Yeah.
So I don't wear headsets when I'm playing. I did have a funny story. One of the pros, who I won't name, was wearing headsets, and I was watching him, and I asked him what he was listening to. He says, oh, nothing. I said, what?
Uh-huh.
I said, no. When I go to the restroom or something like that, I put the headsets on so nobody stops me. Good idea.
I have another pro, who, again, shall remain nameless. Blah, blah.
Easy for you to say.
Exactly. But sometimes they do listen to music, but sometimes they put them on so that the people think that he's not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And he is totally paying attention. Mm-hmm. And he's just watching the whole time. If I ever wear heads, I used to wear them a lot early in tournaments. I don't as much anymore, I have to say, because I like really focusing at the beginning. I put them on when I get a little bit on tilt, so I can calm myself down. But I always only put it in one ear. Always, because mm-hmm. I never want to miss any of the action. And if I'm ever involved in a big hand, the other one comes thunk, right out.
See, now that's a very good point there that made us slid in. You said you put them on sometimes when you're on tilt.
Yeah.
That's your everybody has your own personality, your own way to handle things. You get a little on tilt, maybe you put the headphones on, it calms you down, gets you back into your zone and everything. That's perfect. If for some reason you're distracted by other things, maybe you turn out giving off a tell, I don't know, whatever, and headphones help you, put the blooming things on.
Mm-hmm.
Each person has his own individual playing and mood and different like that. We have a gentleman back in St. Louis, needs to wear headphones because he gets distracted all the time, starts giving off his hands, the whole bit like that.
Yeah.
He needs to sit there like a shell with headphones on and just play his cards.
In fact, he played in the main event last year, and I was playing in the cash games and walking around and sweating various friends, Dennis and other people who I knew, and I went over to him, and I saw him talking with his headphone, you know, his earbuds, from his Apple earbuds, kind of dangling over his shoulder. And I walked over to him and said, put those back in and shut up. And he, you're right, because I told him that beforehand. And he puts them back in, okay, and he plays well for a while, and I go back a couple of hours later, and he's talking, you know, he's hitting on the waitress or whoever it is. What are you doing? It's only the main event of the World Series of Poker. Stop doing this. If you got those for a reason, put them in. Now, I'll tell you that I got some, you know, noise-canceling headphones. I don't like the earbuds, so I like to wear regular headphones. Probably the byproduct of 30-plus years in the radio business,
right.
Wearing headphones. But I got them, and sometimes I just put them on and turn them on for the noise reduction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because all of that chip clatter and all of that other hum that goes on in the room after hours and hours and hours, and these tournaments, you know, the World Series doesn't go 14 hours anymore. You're only going to play maybe 8 or 10 hours in this year's main event. But if you play other events, like we played 14 hours on the first day of the tournaments at Foxwoods, that can get to be incredibly irritating at the wrong frequencies. And so I'll put those on, and I actually do plug them in to my iPhone. Not because I'm listening to stuff, but because I'm texting and tweeting from my iPhone, and I don't want them to think that I'm texting and tweeting at the table. I want them to think that I'm listening to something picking something that I'm going to listen to.
Well, and then also remember the preliminary events, which a lot of people are going to be playing. That is 12 hours, 13 hours. I think they're going from 12 to midnight or 12 to 1 or whatever the case is. So I want to say with regards to the preparation that we were talking about previously is that you need to know how to eat, etc., while you're there. But I tell everyone, this is going to be a marathon when you're playing. And I would prepare 1 week, if you want to get so bold as to say 2 months, 2 weeks to a month in advance. But at least that 1 week before, you better get your sleep. Because in all honesty, when you're out there, you're not going to. And I say that in the respect of, if you make it through a day one of a prelim, and you've never played before, or even make it through a day one of a main event, you'll have a couple days, yes, but you're so excited that you just made it through this day. You're going to be thinking about hands. It's going to be, you know, there's so much adrenaline pumping through you. Get your sleep beforehand. Eat well. Exercise beforehand so you are ready. And I will say that's the only way I got through 7-8 days of the main event, because back then we were playing 16-17 hours. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you finish at 4 and you can't get to sleep till 6. Then you wake up at 10 because you're worried you're going to oversleep. Mm-hmm. I used to go for a run every morning, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, you finally get to the point where you're just drained. And imagine if I had done that on no sleep going into the thing. I mean, I was sleeping 8-10 hours beforehand. So
right.
I really say that to a lot of people. Prepare yourself before. This is a long run. And, hell, you want to have runs to the final table. You don't want to be out day 1 and 2. Expect to make it to day 7 or hope to make it to day 7. If you do, you'll be happy that you slept.
Great points. And getting your exercise and getting enough sleep is and limiting your alcohol, which are all things that are hard to do when you're in Vegas, are just as important as reading all the books and, you know, on strategy and everything.
Kevin Schaffel and Bernard Lee, along with Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips, giving you some tips on what you need to know about going to the World Series of Poker for the first time. We'll have more in just a moment. This portion of the Final Table brought to you by our home casino, Harrah's St. Louis, where the Eat Up Buffet is serving up crab legs Thursday and Friday nights for only $24.99. And on Saturdays, it's Dungeness crab legs and T-bone steaks for $24.99. And don't forget live rock and roll at the Voodoo this Thursday night with Ray Manzarek and Robbie Krieger of the Doors with vocalist Brett Scallions from Fuel. Tickets are on sale at Ticketmaster's now and at the Harrah's Gift Shop. For more details, go to harrahsstlouis.com. Back with more of the Final Table in a moment on thechipleader.com and 590 The Fan KFNS.
Dennis Phillips has flown over 100,000 miles this year to play poker tournaments on three continents. But he always comes back to St. Louis to talk about the game. Here he is at the final table with Paul Harris from Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Don't forget about our final table merchandise available on thechipleader.com. Shirts, sweatshirts, hats, and now new lower shipping fees available right now. You order it today, we'll ship it out to you tomorrow. That's Final Table merchandise, pretty cool stuff too, at thechipleader.com. This portion of our show brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance. You've heard us talking with Jack Pappas, who is the, who is the executive director of the PPA, talking about what happens when the UIGEA goes into enforcement just a week away. You can get updates on that and all the other struggles that poker players are having. Well, actually, I shouldn't call it a struggle. I should call it the fight for the freedom of poker players going on in courthouses and state houses around the country. In fact, they're planning a rally for later this week in front of the Washington State Supreme Court because they're fighting for poker players there. They do it for you wherever you are across the USA, and they can only do it with the help of poker players like you. Become a member of the PPA by going to thePPA.org. Put $20 in the pot. Think of it as the best bet you'll make this year, supporting poker in every form at thePPA.org. Now, more of the conversation that Dennis and I had with Kevin Schaffel, one of the 2009 November 9. He came in eighth in the main event last year. Dennis, of course, was third the year before. And back in 2005, our other guest, Bernard Lee, was 13th in the World Series of Poker main event. So here are some more tips for you on what you need to know if you're going to your first ever World Series of Poker. Roll it, Mike.
Let's just talk a little bit about strategy, and I want to ask you guys about the minefield that is any huge event. The fact that you have this many players out there means you're going to run into some players who are not, well, let's just say they're not the greatest quality, right? You run into those and you have to avoid more minefields and make fewer assumptions about your opponents, right?
The thing you have to be careful of in a main event or in something like this is people that think they have to accumulate chips. They've heard that I have to be aggressive. They get a flush draw. They're literally willing to risk their entire tournament on that flush draw. And I don't care if you're an 80-20 favorite. Still 20% of the time you're going to lose that.
Mm-hmm.
Beware.
I had a guy come to me in yesterday's tournament, the 1500 event, and we had been playing for about 7 hours, and nobody at the table had more than 60,000. And this guy sits down with 180,000,
mm-hmm.
and he proceeds. And we're playing like 300, 600, or 400, 800. He proceeds to put 5 or 50. He puts 15 or 20,000 into the first raise.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that he was a loose cannon, and it took him about 5 or 6 hours, but he did finally lose all the chips. But how did he accumulate 180,000? There's probably 15 people walking out the door, talking about their bad luck.
Yeah.
You definitely need to get lucky, if you will, against those. You have a chance to pick up 40, 50, or 100,000 chips from somebody like that, but you can also lose them just as easy. So there is a certain luck factor in there, and you want to be careful.
Yeah, and I heard a guy talking the other day, and I just kind of shook my head. He says, I love these deep stack tournaments because you have so many chips, you can play every hand for a while. It doesn't hurt you.
Yep.
I'm sitting there going, yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you want to play a 9-3 offsuit or whatever on the miracle that you get the perfect flop or something? But his philosophy was, I've got deep stack. I'm starting with 30,000 in chips or 40,000, whatever. I can play every hand.
Last year, I played in what they called the stimulus special at the World Series in 2009, the first $1,000 event they'd ever had. Over 6,000 people played in this event. And at my table, I had a guy who had that philosophy. He literally played every single hand. And I'm talking about for a raise, or he would limp in, or every single hand. Needless to say, the rounds were an hour long, and he didn't make it to the second round. That strategy is not going to work for you. You know what? You might get lucky and you might catch some cards. Your Jack 8 offsuit might make a straight on somebody. You might take down a big pot because nobody's going to put you on that. But you're going to be walking out before most of the other people.
Well, the problem you get into it is you get in with these danger hands. You start out with a 3-5 of spades and you make a flush. But the guy next to you makes the bigger flush. You come in there with a jack-eight, and the flop is a jack-jack.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh, I made a monster hand, except for the guy that has queen-jack to your right.
So then what do you say to somebody who's had some success? Maybe they've won an online qualifier. Maybe they've won a qualifier at Harrah's. Or maybe they're buying in for the first time. They're going to put up the full 10K for the main event or the 1K for one of the smaller events of the World Series of Poker. Do they have to have a different strategy when they walk in that door? Should they be thinking of a different strategy before they even sit down in that seat?
I think so. But my problem is it's what got them there. It's what they're comfortable doing. If that guy is comfortable being the aggressor, being and playing wild and crazy, unfortunately, that's what he needs to play when he's out there.
But what if you're more of a nitty player and you don't play a lot of hands and you're going to be going out there against all these people and you're going to see how they're going to be playing and maybe you're not even used to that in your home game or in your local casino game? How do you react to that? Should you change your strategy or do you stay a nit?
Well, it's all part of adjusting to, you know, who's at your table. I mean, we had a going back to the same table, we had been playing for 6 or 8 hours together, and everybody was feeling pretty comfortable as to how everybody was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And this one guy sat down, and he changed the dynamic of the table unlike any other table I've ever been in, cash game or tournaments. And so you have to adjust, and everybody did. Everybody waited to get their money in with this guy, and that's what happened. I picked up 50,000. I had ace queen, and he insta called my all in with 6-8 of hearts, and I doubled up that way. And other people doubled up. Other people lost too.
Yep.
But of course, he hit his hands. Somebody had jacks, and this guy called him with 7-8 offsuit. And it came 7-7-5, and he lost a big chunk of his money. So he built his stack up again, but he eventually gave it all away to everybody at the table.
Yeah.
So you just have to adjust, and you have to, again, get a little lucky that you, when you get your hand against that particular person, it holds up. And if it doesn't, then, you know, you go play the cash games until the next turn.
Don't you find more often it's not a matter of just getting lucky, it's a matter of avoiding being unlucky?
Right, absolutely. And that's... I was just about to say, that's what I end every one of my radio shows with. May you always go in with the best hand, and may you never get unlucky.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, listen, you go in with an overpair to someone else's pair, it's an 81-19, you round it to 80-20. To do that 5-6 times in a row is a very low percentage. People think, to keep doing it over and over and over and over again and not have somebody suck out on you. You know, on a 6-7-8 day tournament at the main event, it's going to happen eventually, you know. And unfortunately for me, it happened when I was 13 left. But thank God it didn't happen when I was 200 left, you know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, absolutely. You said something the other day when we were talking, Kevin, which I thought was excellent. You said you went, I can't remember the exact situation, hours and hours and hours, and somebody at the table finally said, "We've never seen one of your hands."
Right.
Yeah, I remember playing. We were almost done with the day. It was a 12-hour day at the World Series of Poker. And somebody, you know, just observed. He says, "I don't think we've seen you turn over a hand all day." And it's true. It's just the way it is sometimes.
Now, how is that possible? Explain. Because, I mean, if you're playing all day long, certainly you must get to some showdowns. Or are you raising people off hands? Or
no.
did you have an image of the table of being so tight that when you made a move?
Obviously, I must have had an image. But I do, and I don't know, I mean, if it's a good thing or a bad thing, I go for long periods of time without being able to show a hand, without making a flush, without making a straight, whatever. And it helps in some ways because my image is now... You know, every time I bet, I have something, you know, it's not a horrible image. Believe me, I would love to show a flush. I would love to show a full house. I would love to show a straight flush once in a while. It would be a beautiful thing. But and when I get it, it's not like I'm raising everybody off the pot.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm value betting properly. Yeah. But it's happened a lot to me actually. Many days.
But it also like means that you're not getting in pre-flop for the races with the jacks versus the ace kings.
No.
You're not getting in there when you have a marginal hand and trying to bluff somebody off.
No.
Shoving with a draw and hitting.
There you go.
Well,
exactly.
Yeah, unfortunately, I did shove with a draw at the World Poker Championship when I had 100 big blinds and the guy happened to flop a set on me. But that was a totally different situation. There were two other people in the hand, and I thought the situation was perfect for what I did. And I still had outs, but it didn't happen. But normally I'm not putting most of my chips at risk with just a draw. In fact, I heard somebody say, geez, I can't believe he put all that in with a draw. But it was a much more complicated situation than that, where somebody raised and then somebody appeared to squeeze with a lot of chips. In fact, he had so many chips, he was still stacking them up from the previous hand. So it looked like he was just trying to make a play at a pot. So,
wow. You
know, I did what I did, and, you know, I still had, you know, 9 or 10 outs, and they just didn't come in. So, I try to put it in with the best of it and see if they hold up. In fact, at the World Series of Poker last year, that is what happened. I did not get run over with the cards, but I did not get unlucky, and that was the key to my success last year for sure.
All right. We only have about 2 minutes left here. Plans for the 2010 World Series of Poker. Bernard, what will you be playing in this year?
I'll be playing in probably for about two-thirds to three-quarters of the main event, to the chagrin of my family, and to me as well, because I'll miss the hell out of them. This is the longest I'll ever be away from them. But a lot of preliminaries, probably as many of the no-limit events, but I'm actually going to be doing some of the mixed games. I wrote a column on ESPN last year saying, if you are really serious about winning a bracelet, and I'm really serious about winning a bracelet, no limit probably is the longest shot, because you're talking about fields of 3,000 to 6,000, 7,000, 8,000. And I've been working a lot on my stud game tournament-wise. I've been playing stud all my life. That's the first game I ever learned how to play. So I'm learning a lot more of stud tournaments and playing a ton. And also, within this year, have played a lot of amazingly on PokerStars, because you can't really get games like this at casinos. Deuce to seven, single draw, no limit. I actually really like the game. It's one of those that really excited me about new concepts, etc. But a lot of the no limit concepts that you have can translate over really well. I think it's a game that, and I've just had a hell of a time. So I'm planning on playing both of the events.
All right. Kevin, what are your plans for this year?
I'm going out about 3 weeks prior to the main event, and I'm going to play in two or three pot limit Omaha games, tournaments, 1 7 stud 8 or better, and probably 4 or 5 no limit events.
And will you be back in the main event?
And I think I'm going to take a shot in the main event. I'm going to try to duplicate Dan Harrington's back to back final tables.
Yeah.
And I'll be playing. Well, I don't want to say what day I'm playing, because, you know, no, but whatever. I'm playing, and I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Well, you know, the record you now have to beat is Dennis's back-to-back runs. 13,290 people he beat in 2 years.
Well, I'll take that run, too. I'll take 45th right now, and 45th, right?
I'll take 44th.
Okay.
Well, after those two remarkable long, deep runs, what are you doing this year, Dennis?
Well, first of all, I'm going down to Lima, Peru for the America Cups finals. PokerStars has asked me to be the captain of the American team this year. That will take the first week of the series. I'll come back from that about the 8th of June, and I will probably be in Vegas the rest of the time, and I will play a variety, too. I'll probably be playing more the Deuce of 7 triple draw and the Raz and that type.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll be playing a lot of them for the same reasons that Bernard was saying.
I'm glad he's not going to be at the same event as me.
As Bernard Lee and Kevin Chappell joined Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips in a session we recorded at Foxwoods a couple of weeks ago as part of their Megastack tournament, we are headed off to Las Vegas. Dennis is actually already there. I'm going to hit the road and join him in a couple of days. Next week's show will be from the Dennis Phillips suite high atop the Rio, the home of the 2010 World Series of Poker, and we'll tell you about all the activity from the very first weekend, and we'll line up a whole bunch of special guests as well. We hope you can join us then Tuesdays at 2 here on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast available on thechipleader.com. I'm Paul Harris. Thanks for listening.